بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. Welcome to the next installment of Inner Life, of the Inner Life. This is the second to last chapter, chapter 9, which is called the Angel Human, or Angel Man originally. So I guess we can call it Angel Human. So in this chapter we are exploring the evolution of the soul from its angelic origins to a state of spiritual mastery. Gateka. The Hindu word for Deva denotes an angel human, and the Sufi term for this is Farishta Khazlat. Every soul has its first expression in the angelic life, and therefore it is not surprising if we show angelic traits in our life, for it is the depth of our soul. An angel may be called a heart being, Jabarut. The sphere of the angels has been called the sphere of power, because love has in it more power than will, for love draws from God all the time, especially as angelic people are engaged in expressing praise of God and are more aware of His nearness. The soul that through all the worldly experiences has a tendency to turn toward its origin, its angelic state, shows a different character from the general characteristics of human beings. The soul shows the tendency of the compassion that always points in a certain direction, whichever way it is moved or turned. The word Deva means a shining one. So I just want to explain a little bit about the soul's journey according to Hazrat Inayat Khan. The soul begins its journey from the unmanifested divine infinite consciousness, which is Zat or Ahadiyat. It's where all the souls are one. There is no separation from the divine. And then through the sphere of potentiality, the soul then moves to moves through the process of incarnation, and the first step in that is the angelic plane. So this is the realm of souls, you could say. It's purity and devotion. And then the next plane is the astral plane, or the plane of the jinn. And the soul partakes in different attributes here, and kind of forgetting its pure origin. But it is the realm also of genius, genius. It's perfected a kind of knowledge in a way. Then after that, the soul descends to a human plane, the physical plane, where the soul is embodied. And our purpose as human beings is to remember again the divinity, the unity, the infinite consciousness that we are all part of, at the same time as we are being given, you could say, the freedom to experience the world of variety and the world of choice. So we need to learn to make our human heart the shrine for the divine, and to begin to remember that heavenly unity, which is why we do the spiritual practice. And after physical death, the soul travels back, and with all the experiences of its journey on Earth affecting its progress. And again, the soul travels through the finer realms and then back to the divine unity in the end. So the innate angelic soul is every soul who has come to the earth begins in that angelic state, which is characterized by love and proximity to God. And this purity is most often visible in infancy, but becomes covered by worldly attributes as we grow. So the next Gataka again. The next type of soul to the Deva is the Jinn. This is a characteristic of a soul that keeps in contact with the inner region, which is reflected outwardly in all that is beautiful. While the soul of every person is looking for the beauty that is outward, the attention of the Jinn soul is directed not so much to that beauty which is reflected outwardly, as it is to the source of that beauty which is within. It is among those who live the inner life that these two characteristic types of the Deva, or angel, and the Jinn are mostly to be found, because they are less absorbed in the life of the world and more attracted to the inner life. But to such a soul, while the external life is of interest, at the same time it is a disappointment. All that interests a fine soul in this world only interests so long as it does not touch it. Once it has touched it, this soul loses interest. Its natural inclination is to withdraw. Therefore, it has been said that the soul is in the world but not of it. So oftentimes people who are considered introverts are this type of people. They feel out of place in this world. They are often disappointed by the shadows of the external life, and that leads them to desire to withdraw or drop out from social conventions. And these souls may be highly capable, like masters or scientists like Einstein or Darwin or Beethoven or Mozart, but they often appear childlike or naive to the world because they do not value the same standards of rank, power, or luxury as the generality of people. So there is a story called The Prince of Dreamers. And this is about the Mughal Emperor Akbar, who was a great Sufi. He had a court of marvelous persons drawn from all religions and all walks of life. He surrounded himself with wise people from different religious traditions and truly honored all the inner knowledge. And even though he had all the earthly power, that did not interest him. In fact, he was illiterate, and he couldn't even read or write. But with all that, at the same time, he understood all arts and sciences, even if he did not read or write. So there are other people like that, and manifest this quality of angelic or jinn-like kind of out of this world or out of this place in this world. They manifest that kind of aspect of the soul. Kateka. The characteristic of the deer, as described by the poets of India, is that when it is thirsty, it runs about in the forests looking for water. And it is greatly delighted on hearing the sounds of thunder and runs about with a desire to drink. But sometimes it is only thunder and does not rain afterwards. Or if it rains, it is perhaps only a shower and not enough water to drink. And the deer still remains thirsty. And so it is with a seeking soul. They look mostly to religion and become disappointed. Or they look into art, into music, science, and it is still not enough, although sometimes they find the poetry of mystics, and then they have a little satisfaction. But they want more. Sometimes they want to express themselves, and often they cannot. And thus there are often miserable people who are far advanced. And so it is the thirst of a fine soul in this world. The soul of the spiritually inclined person is constantly thirsty, looking for something, seeking for something. And when it thinks it has found it, the thing turns out to be different. And so life becomes a continual struggle and disappointment. So I would like to stop here for a moment for reading and do a little bit of practice. I'd like to bring in two divine names. The first one is Yabar. 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 And this is the uniquely perfect and complete one. It means sweet through and through. It is a perfection of love, both in its potential and its manifestation. It brings serenity to the soul that is maintained in all conditions of life. So it's a In meaning, it's very, very similar to the meaning of Yarahim. And it is a remedy for feeling broken because of having your ideals shattered in life. So it's like it helps us with this, you could say, this dear consciousness, or when we just want to run away when the whole world is too disappointing and too hard. And then the second quality I'd like to invite is Ya Halim. Ya Halim. Ya Halim. And that is the tender, gentle, kind love. It's the physical, emotional, and nurturing tenderness. It really has this quality of so tender, so tender. It's softness and kindness that softness and kindness is what brings the perseverance of this quality. And it brings mildness of manner and is antidote for anger and impatience. So whenever we get impatient in the world with all the power struggles that are going on and all the shadows of the physical manifestation of the human beings, whenever we get disappointed in that, or maybe we get angry, then this Ya Halim helps us to bring mildness of manner to that. So let's do those two for a little bit. Ya bar. Ya Halim. 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 And for a moment we just breathe with this. Breathing in, ya bar. Breathing out, ya Halim. Breathing in the remedy for when we feel broken, the remedy of perfection of love. And breathing out the mildness, the kindness, the gentle softness and tenderness. And then letting go of the words and breathing with a feeling for just a moment. Amen. Although life seems to make this soul indifferent, it cannot really become indifferent, and it is this state working through this life that gives us a certain feeling. The Hindus call this vairagya, from which the term vairagi has come. Vairagi means a person who has become indifferent. And yet indifferent is not the only word for it. For in that indifference there is love. The first feeling. So now we are going into talking about this, you could say the path of the vairagi, the path of the person who is walking the inner life. And the first feeling of the vairagi is to turn away from everything. That person shows the nature of the deer, which runs away at the flutter of a leaf. For the person becomes sensitive and convinced of the disappointing results that come from limitation and changeableness of the life in the world. So this is the first step of the vairagi. We are so sensitive and so disappointed in the world, in the external world, that we just want to fly away, we want to hide away, we don't want to have any part of it. Hurt within, they become sensitive, and the first thing that occurs to their mind is to fly, to hide somewhere, to go into the cave in the mountains or into the forest where they will meet no one. And yet, that does not mean that they in any way lack what is called love and kindness. For if ever they live in this world, it is only out of love. When they are not interested in the world, it is only love that keeps them here. So, society creates these fixed norms and conventions that often act as a barrier to spiritual freedom. And most people who are considered normal, they just stay in those fixed standards and in this kind of customs of that the authorities and the world kind of sets about for us. However, perhaps it's worthwhile asking that question: who has the authority to select a standard? Who really has that authority? Since most people who are kind of wearing this mask of normal and who adhere to all these standards, they're not really happy. These standards do not lead us to happiness. So the vairagi learns to see the falsehood of the ordinary life and refuses to be enslaved by the value society places on objects or rank or power, the external forces. So when vairagi becomes more developed, then they become like a serpent. They become wise like a serpent. They seek solitude as the serpent seeks solitude. The serpent is never interested in moving about among the crowd. It always has its home where it hides itself. It only comes out when it's thirsty or hungry, and then it goes back into its hole and stays there until it wants food again. The serpent has lost all voraciousness. You know, they don't have any desire for worldly life. Gateka. And so has the soul of vairagi. They only want to live in this world for the sake of others and not for themselves. Their connection with people in the world is to serve them, not asking for their service. To love them, not asking for love. To be friends with them, and not asking for friendship. Once the vairagi has come to realize the falsehood of ordinary life, they never allow themselves to be deceived again. So this is now the second stage of Vairagya evolution, you could say. The first one was the deer. So when we are so sensitive that we just want to run away from this life. And now, this serpent stage, we become wise and solitary. We live in the world only for necessity, and we avoid being sort of pulled in by worldly desires. Kataka. They see the world with the eye of experience and say, I do not expect anything from you. If I come to you, it is to give to you, not to take from you. I do all things for you, but will not be bound to you. This is the work of the Vairagi. Actually, the Sufi takes this attitude. We do not impose on others, for there is no compulsion in Sufism. Even in Islam, as Muhammad taught. But this has not been practiced particularly. That's what Murshid Sam is saying. So let's do another little practice. Use another two names for the one. And in fact, we started today's session with two of these names for strength. The first one is Yakadir. 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 And this is the expression of all the purpose and all the strength and will in the universe as one power. It gives a definite meaning and a real purpose to everything in life. It is our unlimited capacity which gives us a sense of value, power, spaciousness, and confidence that all things are possible. And it is antidote to feeling worthless and powerless, and gives relief to those who believe they are living wasted lives. So none of us are living wasted lives, and we can support this with Yakadir. And then the second one is Yamuktadir. 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 It's the one who places us on a particular path to God and enables us to firmly put our feet on that path and keep going. It's our ability to actualize the divine purpose in our life. There are no mistakes. Nothing is ever wasted or lost. So let's just connect with that sense of power and that sense of divine purpose and our strength to walk that path, knowing that we can walk this path with confidence and nothing that we do is ever wasted because we always move towards the fulfilling the purpose of our life. Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadir. Yakadir, Yamuktadir, 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 Yakadir, Yamuktadir. Yakadir, Yamuktadir, Yakadir, Yamuktadır. Yakadır. 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 Yamuktadır. Breathing with that strength, breathing the strength in and feeling our confidence to walk that path of the divine purpose in our life. Putting one step in front of the other and keep going because we have that strength. So now we move to the third step of Vairagi evolution. And that's when the Vairagi is still more developed in this feeling of Vairagya, then they become a lion. They are no more the serpent seeking solitude, although they love it still. They are no more the deer running away from the crowd. They are the lion who stands and faces all difficulties. Intellectual people, reading the literature, often take it literally. They begin to expect that one has to go through these various stages one by one, as if climbing a ladder. This leaves no room for grace or for past development or anything. And actually, several of these stages may manifest at once. This may be contrary to logic, but life's unfoldment is not according to any logical system. No longer sensitive, but with all strength and power, with all balance, with patience, the lion endures, and with a brave spirit, they stand in the crowd in the world. And it is the work of the Sufi to bring this out in everybody. When love, harmony, and beauty are no longer ideals, but they become realities in one's nature, and one can communicate this to others. So the lion is the strong and balanced and brave one. They stand in the crowd to serve humanity without being jarred by it. It is in this way the lion-like soul of the Deva the angel human, comes to the rescue of humanity. What is called the master, or the saint, or prophet, or sage, is this developed vairagi. And this person, this lion, they become like the fruit that has ripened on the tree, helped by the sun. In this way, this soul that is ripened by experience in life and has not allowed itself to become decayed by that experience, but has upheld the truth with balance, with hope and patience, directed by love for humanity and desire to serve God, without any desire for appreciation or return from below or from above. So our ultimate goal is to become that ripe fruit, someone who has experienced life's disappointments but remains directed by love and desire to serve God and humanity without expecting anything in return. So I'd like to tell you a story, and this is a Sufi story of a dervish who lost his donkey. So there was a dervish who would travel for many days trading his goods in towns and villages that he passed through. And this one night, after a long journey, he arrived at a remote town on the edge of the desert. And he's, you know, as is customary among dervishes, he sought out the nearest Sufi house to spend the night. So he went straight to the stables, and he was attending to his donkey and gave the donkey some food and some water. And then, just to be sure, he was also giving a nice tip to a young stable boy to take extra care of the donkey. And then he went inside. But in this town, the other dervishes were mostly very poor and very hungry people who, you know, were constantly kind of on the verge of sin. And when those dervishes realized that the newcomer had a donkey in the stables, they decided to take advantage, and so they sold it to one of the rich guests who was leaving that night. And then they spent the money to buy some food and candles and wine and nice things for the evening. So they were having a grand feast, and they were constantly extending much courtesy to this donkey's owner, to that dervish, traveling dervish, and they were bowing to him and making him feel really welcome, and then invited him to partake in their party, in their meal, and they were all having the meal. And then after that finished, then they began a sema. They began some music and started to do some practices, and they sang and they danced and they were whirling round and round and then prostrating on the floor, and as the sema gathered pace, then suddenly there was this voice to be heard: "The ass is gone, the ass is gone." And the musicians all picked up the beat and began to sing enthusiastically: The ass is gone. The ass is gone. And everybody repeated madly after the musicians. The ass is gone. The ass is gone. And the dervish, the traveling dervish, he was totally excited and totally in ecstasy, and he was chanting the loudest of them all, the ass is gone, the ass is gone. And so it continued long into the night until dawn, and at sunrise everybody, all these dervishes, left one by one in different directions. And then the owner of the donkey finally gathered his belongings and was getting ready for another day to work. And he went to the stables to get his donkey. And then he did not see his donkey there. And at first he was thinking that, okay, the stable boy must have taken the animal to the stream to let him drink. But after a little while, the young boy returned without a donkey. And the dervish said, hey, where's my donkey? And the young boy said, I don't know. And then the dervish became furious and said, if you're not telling me, I left my donkey in your care, if you're not telling me what happened to the donkey, I shall take you directly to the authorities. So then the boy finally confessed, oh, I was overpowered by these other dervishes. I was so afraid. I thought they would be killing me. They took your donkey and they sold it, and they used the money to buy the food last night. So, why didn't you come to tell me? The dervish then said. I tried, but when I said the ass is gone, then everybody just started chanting, and you were chanting the loudest of all, the ass is gone, the ass is gone. So I thought that you were, that you are a mystic, and you must have given them your consent. Oh, I was excited. I was aroused by their enthusiasm, the dervish finally realized and finally said. But I was foolish to imitate them. The imitation has destroyed me. It has damaged me beyond repair. So, this is the story to illustrate how we can sometimes let ourselves be swayed by the norms of others, or we just follow what others do, and don't think clearly, and then lose our own truth. So perhaps we can think, what is the donkey for us in this particular moment? What is that vital inner truth or responsibility that we might be tempted to sell or forget to join, in order to kind of join in with what everybody else is doing? Might we be neglecting a part of our own spiritual journey or heart warning in order to dance to the rhythm of the others? As I think it was Murshid Sam who said that the Dharma is nothing fixed. If fixed, it is not the Dharma. So we need to learn to be able to use our own inner wisdom and our own heart's kind of direction, the spirit of guidance from inside, to direct us on the path which is unique to us, so that we don't get swayed from that path by following what others are doing around us or what we are expected to do by the authorities or by the those who seem to be making and creating the norms. So then one reason, you know, or one way of us being able to get in touch with our hearts again is when we take periods of seclusion from the world, when we go to Kilvat, when we go to do retreat or step back from our busy lives for a little bit, so that we lose that that voraciousness for worldly results or for worldly attractions, and that we can reconnect again with our heart. And this is what the message, the divine message, is telling us to bring that divine message, which is our own unique message, to our community, to our nation, on or to the world. Or like Murshid Sam said, meditate on God and you may become a deva as the divine grace allows. Sufism is based on experience. So we are going to stop here and I leave you with this message. And for a moment we can just take a little quiet, few quiet breaths to allow these words to sink in. Sufism is based on experience. The Dharma is nothing fixed. If fixed, it is not the Dharma. And for a moment we can send out our love and blessings to all our sisters and brothers on the path. And offering our gratitude to our teachers and guides and all the beings of light for their support and protection and guidance.